Welcome back to the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast. Today, I am having on Katie Wells. She's the host of the podcast Maximized Minimalist, where she tackles all things decluttering and simplifying your life so that you don't have this stressful feeling when you walk into a room. And I know that's something we can all use. I'm especially thinking about that a lot right now as we are transitioning into kids' fall clothes. It's just one of those seasonal times that I like to start fresh. I take out all the summer clothes, put in the fall clothes, take an inventory, see what it is that we need, fill in new wardrobe gaps. And so it just feels like the right time to talk about decluttering and minimizing. My name is Lisa, mom of six and creator of the blog and YouTube channel Farmhouse on Boone. Join me as I share with you my love for creating a handmade home from scratch cooking and a little mom and entrepreneur life along the way. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I already did a little intro, but can you tell us a little bit about your blog or your social media, your mission?
Absolutely. So what's up, everyone? I'm so happy to be here on your show. Thanks for having me, Lisa. I'm Katie Wells. I host a top-rated podcast called The Maximized Minimalist, and my goal is to help families declutter and simplify their life so they can just have more joy and less stress, because let's face it, the world is stressful enough without having to deal with a house full of constant to-dos and constant messes. So that is my mission in life, and my happiest days are literally just spent helping families let go of their clutter. This is parents, this is kids. So I have obviously my podcast and I have online programs, and that's really, and Instagram too. I really love Instagram. That's kind of my social media of choice, and you can find me at Katie Joy Wells on Instagram.
Yeah. I was thinking about this podcast coming up, and currently we are about to get out our fall clothes. So for the kids, like, yes. Oh boy, there's like a little decluttering time that happens with each season. So is that something that you typically teach?
Yeah, not formally, but it's definitely something I do in my own home. That's actually one of my favorite things about kind of season changes. So we live in North Carolina. So we kind of have four true seasons. I'm from the Midwest originally. And so obviously if you live anywhere with snow, you definitely have four true seasons with, harsh winters. But I love being able to kind of cull and edit their wardrobes at season changes, because I mean, look, kids grow like weeds. And I think just having a system in place to take inventory, get rid, things that are stained or outgrown or that, aren't quite good enough for donating, I'll cut up and use for like old rags or to wash the outside of the car with. And so I kind of just have a system, a super simple system in place, in those seasonal transitions to just cull the wardrobe, donate what they've outgrown, because they grow so fast. My boys are 4 and 6. And so obviously you've got several children, so you understand, and with different sizes and everything, it can get very mixed up. So I kind of use that space and time intentionally each season to do that. And it just makes every single day makes their life getting dressed so much easier, and my life, because it makes our mornings a little smoother as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have like a certain number of clothing or like number of pieces that you try to stick to, or are you just kind of like what feels like the drawer is an overflowing type of person?
Yeah. I don't stick to any hard, fast rules necessarily. One of the biggest things I've adapted in my own declutter journey is just making sure that I have an intentional set physical boundary for any category of thing. So this applies towards my own clothes, to socks, to kitchen silverware, to mugs in my cabinet, right? I've assigned a shelf or a specific space, no matter where we're talking about, that's my space, and I don't want to move past that. So a drawer is obviously great because most people have drawers that they store their clothes in. My boys' drawers are kind of like those big 6-drawer, like IKEA drawers. And those are just too big for truly what they need. It's just what I had from when they were little. So I have almost like a little shoebox, and then I, fold everything and put it in there. And that's kind of my space. So when that starts to overflow within the drawer, that's kind of right? That's my red cue or my red flag and cue. I should probably edit and, you know, make sure everything stays tidy in said designated boundary, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. So what are some of your other tips for seasonal things like seasonal decor? Do you keep bins or how do you, you know, I'm getting out the fall stuff today. That is what I'm like working on is putting out all of my fall decor.
Yeah.
And I'm not very good at keeping an inventory of anything. I pretty much, if it's in an inventory, I forget that it exists.
Yeah.
And so I kind of just stick with like fresh and dried flowers and natural things.
That's pretty. I think the biggest hang up and maybe mistake that I see is, you know, like home decor is a lot of people's like happy place, right? Especially fall, pumpkin spice candles. And, you know, when we're at Target and when we walk past the end cap and see a cute new pillow, you know, that's seasonal or whatever, it's easy to forget your inventory at home because naturally a lot of us think, want the next best thing. Like, oh, I don't have a throw pillow that's this color though, or that says this cute saying on it. And we buy those things, we bring them home, and then, you know, things just start to get a little out of hand. So I think the biggest thing to remember is if you want, you know, to get some of this new decor or bring it out, just remember to let some of that older stuff go, right? So typically for a lot of us, that's stuff that is in the bottom of these huge, big, you know, 56 gallon bins. I've seen, you know, big storage bins that a lot of us keep our seasonal decor in. So the stuff that's always on the bottom for at least two seasons, the stuff that you probably haven't touched or pulled out because you're really excited about this new stuff. So being able to just objectively go, listen, my taste has changed. I like this pumpkin pillow better than that pumpkin pillow. So this one can go. And just always remember to just be editing, right? Because seasons change, tastes change. I know you talked about that on one of your recent episodes with that blogger who helps people kind of make a really thrifty, cute, styled space in their home, right? And so just keeping that in mind.
Yeah. And I do, like, I went down to the basement today and I'm like, did I have any fall decor? I don't think I kept anything. And then I found a dried bouquet from my sister's wedding and most of it was pretty ugly, but I was able to clip out quite a few little things that were actually still pretty. I found a wreath that I completely had forgotten about.
Oh, and so, wow.
Yeah. Like I said, if I keep an inventory, it might as well not exist. That's how I am right now. I'm thinking I need to go get my kids a bunch of stuff because they don't have any long sleeves, no pants. Yeah. I'm sure they do. They're just down in the basement. So we'll see.
Try. Yeah, that's it. And I think you kind of answered your own question with that, right? And one of my favorite sayings is the question is the answer. So you already know, like, I have some type of inventory, but do I really want to go in the basement and try and find it? When the easier, more fun thing to do would be to go get new stuff. But right, if you want to keep things simple, maybe save some money, I think time is best spent on the front end, figuring this out before, right, stuff gets to be too excessive, too overwhelming, too frustrating to handle.
Yeah. So where do you usually recommend that people start? Like if they feel like they've been hoarding for a long time, or maybe they don't even feel like they have been, but their house doesn't look like easily cleaned up like yours does there in the background. How do you recommend that people start? I know there's a lot of emotional attachment to items and that is tricky a lot of times.
Yeah. So I used to, let me tell you what I used to recommend and why that's changed. I used to tell people start inside your bathroom vanity because typically in there, right, we don't typically hoard sentimental items in our bathroom vanity. And if you do, I think you're an exception, right? Most of us, it's makeup, beauty products, hygiene products, razors, all that stuff, like makeup sample stuff that can like do a quick edit and get rid of the low hanging fruit, the superficial clutter, stuff that you know needs to go. Most people don't even realize that makeup is not designed to last forever, right? Depending on the makeup or the product, like 6, 12, 18 months, maybe max for the shelf life. So that eyeshadow from 2006 or that foundation from 2010, that doesn't even match your skin, like let it go. I know it costs money, maybe too much money, but just let it go, right? And after about 6 months of recommending that, I really changed my tune to starting with surface areas because it is a very quick, literal facelift you can give your home, right? You're looking at what you can see. You see a clean kitchen table, you see a clean counter, you can maybe see this bench behind me with nothing on it, right? Surface areas. When those are clean and tidy, it gives your house, like, it makes your house feel clean. I am not a clean person by nature. I do not like cleaning at all. But anytime my sister-in-law comes over or a friend pops by and peeks in the house, they're like, your house is so clean. And I have to laugh under my breath because it's just uncluttered, right? The surface areas were tackled. And so typically on surface areas, it's a lot of superficial clutter, right? Paperwork, mail, a lot of things that just need to be tackled and handled. And we need to create these systems for. But if you can just move some of these piles off, find a home for things, which typically things end up on surface areas because you don't have a home for it, or the home you would put it is filled. And so just being able to declutter a lot of stuff from those spaces, again, when you feel that instant facelift, you will get motivated and you will feel inspired to continue to do more versus the bathroom vanity where you have to open the drawer to see that difference. And so that's why I really encourage everyone, right? Start even surface areas, floors, pet toys, shoes, just lifting that stuff up, putting it in a different space. I'm telling you, it just makes the biggest difference in the world.
What about things that people feel like they have an emotional attachment to, but they really don't want? I think that's like where everybody has the biggest struggle. And when something is really expensive and there's that like sunk cost fallacy or whatever they talk about, you know, where you know, you don't, it doesn't serve you well, you know, it's not beautiful. There's really no reason to keep it, but you feel like you have to.
That's so true. And I think I could really answer both of those questions with the same answer. You know, a big part of the declutter process, you know, from the outside looking in, decluttering should, to a lot of people, I say should loosely, be like a really simple thing. It's like, oh, we'll just get rid of your stuff. But we have so many emotional ties to our stuff, just like you stated, right? Like when we look at something, we might say that represents a time in my life that I either wish I had, I want to remember, or maybe, you know, a time I like to look back on or anything, or we tie our value into our things. Like we literally have a relationship with stuff, just like we have a relationship with our kids and our partner. And I think it's always worth asking, like, is it worth hanging on to that relationship with some of this stuff? Because just like we can have toxic relationships where it's a one-way street. Have you ever had friends that are just like, all they do is complain and suck the life out of you? And you have to at some point go, you know what? This friendship served me for this time. I've grown as a person. I'm in a different spot. I wish you the best, but I think I need space, right? We can do the same thing with our stuff. And every time we're able to step away and walk away from all that stuff that we truly don't love and maybe even want to hang out onto deep down, we get one step closer to our authentic self, who we really are, and to whom and what we actually do love. And I think that's really beautiful, underrated thing about decluttering is just uncovering the person you were created to be, you can be, just by simply making space for it. And with sentimental things, right, the same thing goes. I've had women I've worked with who are just super attached to clothes for that value reason, right? You talked about like, oh, I paid money. This was an expensive blouse. And then, you know, I never reach for it. Maybe it's just not my style. Maybe I don't like how the fabric feels. It feels itchy, but they get hung up on that cost component. So I do, and I encourage everyone listening, if you haven't already done this, to set a 20-20 rule. So I did not invent this. In fact, I don't know who did. I don't know if it was the minimalists or who. But in a nutshell, the 20-20 rule is if I can replace this for under $20 for in under 20 minutes, then I'm at peace letting it go. And if it's above that dollar amount, or you can make a different dollar amount, however much you set, it just gives yourself, your brain, an objective tool to use in those moments to go, you know what, maybe I did spend $15 on this, but if I should need it, I'll get, you know, again, I can replace it and I'll be at peace with that. And just remembering that you can always sell something to recoup some of that financial investment, if that helps, right? If it's a higher value item that maybe we could recoup 50%. But I just don't find value personally in me hanging on to something that's taking up space in my home, space wherever it is, even if it's in a drawer and I don't see it. It's also taking up space in your head, whether you realize it or not, when I could make space for something I'm truly going to use and value in this current season. And so that's really where a lot of the perspective shifts and growth happens. And it's almost becomes like a personal development journey that I've experienced through decluttering, kind of comes into play. So in a long-winded answer, there you go.
Yeah, no, I really like thinking about the time investment that goes with each thing that you keep inventory of. So even whenever something is just, it's just sitting there in the drawer, it's no big deal. But every time I open my drawer and I kind of have to like shift things around to get it to open with ease, and then there's something in there that I haven't actually used for a year. And like you said, if I truly need it, I could run to the store right now and grab it for like $5. All the time I've devoted to caring for that item, like everything we keep in our home does involve some kind of care. If it's sitting on your countertop, it involves you moving it to wipe around it. If it's in a cluttered closet, it involves when you have to actually put something in the closet, shifting things around in order to fit it in there. And so, yeah, every little piece kind of takes your attention in some way.
Yeah,
it takes time from you.
Yeah. And most people don't realize there's also a cost perspective to storing things, just like you said. So I read a study not too long ago that it costs an average of $10 a square foot to store things in your home, right? So there's that cost perspective. So maybe you spent $20 on a super cool kitchen tool, but it's costing you money to store it, right? So you paid for it on the front end and the back end. Why not just cut your ties and, you know, embrace the sting, as I call it, which you need to, right? Here's how I will make a better choice in the future next time I'm faced with an impulse buy or a Facebook ad, or maybe it was an intentional purchase. I thought I would use it and turns out I don't like to use that tool because I don't even like to bake, right? Kind of stepping into that more authentic version of yourself along the way. It's just, yeah, there are so many different cost perspectives to just managing and keeping up with all the stuff.
I wonder if were they talking about the like time cost? So your actual time of managing that item and like what the average person makes per hour or something like that. I'm just trying to figure out where they like got that cost.
I know. Yeah. Someone else asked me that.
I go with time.
I need to go back and look at it. That's the thing.
I mean, time's an obvious one. I remember that with the kids. Whenever some of the older ones were a little bit younger, I kept a lot more toys than I do now. And I remember thinking, I put this toy away 10 times today and the kids never actually played with it. Their only fun with that toy is dumping it out. And so I have spent maybe like 2 hours this week putting that toy away. I'm like, wait a minute, they don't even like this toy. Mm-hmm. It's costing me to have this toy. And that's when I started getting rid of stuff like just without reckless abandon or with reckless abandon. Cause I'm like,
that's
this
right.
Is
those moments
taking
in time,
up so much of my time.
Yes. You step on the Lego for the last time. Right. And you go from happy mom to like She-Hulk mom. Right. And then it's like, get rid of everything. So I think everyone can relate who's got kids listening. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You end up with a lot of things. And then there's the struggle of sentimental kid things. Mm-hmm. So they sewed something, they painted something. Do you have any magical tips for that? I mean, I just might be outnumbered because I have 6 kids. Yeah. And so it's like, even when we try to do an art bin of some kind, it ends up people, you know, throw things in there that, you know, maybe that wasn't their best work. It was just a scribble. And then I need to go through the art bin. And now I'm managing the art bin. And I'm thinking, am I ever even going to go through this? Maybe I'll just take a picture and put it on a hard drive. What's your system for that?
I really love the company Archive. Have you heard of them? So what they do is they send you a fairly large box, and I think you might actually be able to pick your size. It's designed to hold like larger like paintings that your kids do, or like little canvases, and you fill it up. So I do this on an annual basis with each of my kids. So again, two sons, and you fill it up with all their artwork from the year or however long you want to do it, maybe school year. And then they turn it into a book, and you can give them instructions on, you know, this one's January, this one's from Mrs. Wilson's class, or any little notes, but kind of think of like a Shutterfly book, but filled with your kids' artwork. And I think it's so cool. And my kids love, we read books at night, my kids love to go back and like, oh, look at this one, where traditionally I'm like, the first thing to do I want to do is pitch a lot of things just because I've learned to be ruthless. However, I do understand that there's value in holding on to it, but even if it's in a keepsake bin somewhere, are they going to look at it? How often is it going to get popped out? Right? Just like you mentioned, you have to edit it every once in a while. That gets overwhelming, especially with more kids. So I'm a big, big fan of like those little archive books. Huge, huge fan. And I actually did it for my artwork too. My sentimental artwork I've had since middle school, instead of hanging on to that, sitting in my garage, I got it turned into an archive book too.
Okay, so it's a book. You're not keeping the actual art. You're keeping a book right. with like pictures. That's a good idea.
Yeah, you
I like
ship
that.
The art to them, and then you can say keep it or send it back. They'll dispose of it there. But yeah.
Oh, that is a really good idea. And yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know the price point on it, or you know what you're looking at there. But I even thought about taking photos of each thing and then just putting it in like a chat book or a Shutterfly book or
yes,
something.
I have a
real
lot of
easy
to do that too.
Yeah.
The caveat is you need to follow up with it. Cause I used to be that person who'd be like, I'll take pictures of this and then handle it later. And then, right. You have next thing, you know, you had 20,000 pictures on your phone. You're like, oh my gosh, who drew this? What, when is it from? And I just know my follow-up is never going to be there. So I just prefer like handling, passing that job on to someone else. And again, I think there's just something so special about having it in a book form, especially for young kids. And I'm hoping they appreciate it and value it when they're a little older. But honestly, like if they don't care for it when they're 16 or 28 or 30, like that's fine. Then it sparked joy. It did its purpose when we kept it, and then it can be gone. Move on.
Well, and it probably made you be able to get rid of the art guilt-free, knowing that you kept it. And really, I know there's probably some people, because I get people who are really sentimental. I get in trouble for saying certain things. I'm sure you do too, but who are like really sentimental, but yet, you know, they never go down and look through that bin. They've kept it,
right?
But that book, you're actually getting use out of that. You're looking
exactly.
at it, reminiscing of when they were two and they right. did this.
I love being able to put sentimental things on like display and to use, like in the corner here. I don't know if you can see that. That's my wedding bouquet. So my mom made me a wedding bouquet out of these vintage flowers and kind of hairpins from like the 50s. I just loved it. And after, I'm like, I'm just so obsessed with this, but it's just going to sit in a bin until, you know, until I'm not on this earth anymore. So I put that out. So I have sentimental things like all over my home that, you know, really spark joy and remind me of, you know, my grandma or my wedding. And that is really like, I think the most special thing is being able to use these things and spark those good memories versus them collecting dust in a box somewhere, you know?
Yeah. They almost, nothing does anything sitting in a bin. I don't even know why there's any bins in the basement, because, you know, I live in an old house, and like, for example, a couple of weeks ago, we actually didn't have power for 3 days and the sump pump went out. And so our basement flooded, not terribly, but to where like there was a foot of water in the basement. And so I had to shuffle around what bins we do have. And so you have to deal with it. And it's a bunch of stuff that I really don't even use. There are some things down there that I get, like my Christmas decor. And there's a few bins of like kids' clothes that I actually keep from year to year, but I try to be pretty good about, if it has any holes or stains, getting rid of it. But still, you know, I had to deal with anything that I actually have kept.
Yeah. And that's kind of the back end to it, right? Where you handle it now or you handle it later. And if, gosh forbid, something happens, like we had a really tragic car accident a few years ago that kind of put me on this path, because at the time of that car accident, I was that mom who was always overwhelmed, stressed out by her house, was not able to be present and show up like the mom I wanted to, because every single time I walked through the front door, I was surrounded by clutter. And I had major clutter-induced anxiety. I was having panic attacks. I couldn't relax in my own home, right? All these things. And right after the car accident, I'm like, my life almost just ended. And how would my kids have remembered me? You know, not as the mom that I couldn't show up as, right? And so that really made me realize this is so much bigger than just letting go of stuff. Because now, years later, I'm able to say yes when they want to play, right? I'm able to get down on the floor with them. I can ignore the dishes on the dirty dishes on the counter for a while because I know I can handle them later. It's not like going to be this huge thing now that I don't have all this clutter to tackle to. And it's just been such a beautiful blessing to me, my family. It's just been amazing. So I can't say enough good things about it.
So do you do like a yearly event, or are you just kind of like often decluttering? I know like Marie Kondo, she does this like one time event, but I don't think she has any kids.
And so she didn't at the time when she wrote her book. And it's actually funny you bring that up, because I think me and millions of other people, listen, this is her book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, is one of the most famous declutter kind of tidy books in the world for good reason. There's so much value in it. But 97% of people who start decluttering after reading her book stop within 3 to 6 months. That is a study I read last year that completely blew my mind, right? And the majority of those people quit within the first 2 to 6 weeks, right? Because a lot, and again, everyone's got their own system, and if it works for you, great. I'm not knocking her, right? I've got systems. They may not work for you. Use hers. But I found it as a working mom with two kids under two, right, to grab all the clothes in my closet, which was a disaster, Lisa, an absolute disaster. I can't even, it took me about 8 hours. And this is with both kids home, and I'm trying to nurse at the same time. Does this spark joy? I don't know. It's a nursing top. You know, spit up all over it. And so that was the one time I said, I will never do this again. And then ironically, that book sat on my nightstand for another year and was clutter itself. And so anyway, I say also another article I read the other day was she said after she had kids, which was after she wrote the book, that even now with two, I think she's got two adorable little girls that are toddlers. She said, I don't even have the energy to keep up with a lot of the tidy habits that I talk about. And I was like, okay
now so
I
the feel truth a is coming
better.
Out.
Better.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sushi rolling my socks. And again, some people love it. Some people don't. Take what works for you and leave the rest. That's okay. But I did find that to be interesting.
Yeah. She had a lot of really great points that really got me thinking, because this was before, I feel like I've been decluttering for so long now that it's pretty much second nature. I'm not as worried about getting rid of things. But when I first read it, it had a lot of revolutionary points to me that were great, but I could tell that parts of the book were a single lady or whatever, not a mom, like yeah. Speaking, you know, this and is not
yes.
Practical.
It's so easy to, I think a lot of us use it as an excuse, like, oh, well, she's not a mom. This isn't going to work for me. And and sometimes that's a valid reason, but not always. And so I'm much more with my students. I'm much more on creating habits. Like if I talk about one thing as much as decluttering, it's creating and sticking to consistent habits and replacing a lot of old habits. And here's the thing with decluttering, it matters just as much, like pay attention to your outflow and what you're getting rid of. Absolutely, that's huge, but you also need to pay attention to your inflow, right? The stuff you're bringing into your home. Are you being a good gatekeeper of your home? Are you letting your kids bring home everything from the birthday parties, all the McDonald's toys, all the school stuff? Are you going to Target and getting your dopamine hit from, right, the end caps, like we talked about earlier, the pumpkin spice candles, even though you've already got six on your mantle, right? All these things. And so, right, it's just, I don't know. I really look at what I teach as a big mindset, like overarching themes and mindset shifts, as well as like tactical on the ground strategies to use as well.
Yeah. And I find that even whenever I try to be really careful about what I purchase and bring into the home, the kids still end up with so many random little things. Like we'll go to the farmer's market and some guy is handing out some pouches that he made, or we went to a fall festival and everybody got stickers, and I have to be really quick about getting them back out.
Yes.
And you know, you know, with your kids, if it's going to be okay or not. I have kids that will forget all about it. And so it's fine. Yay, you got that. And then they don't even notice that it's gone the next day. But then I also have some, and I actually did another, I forget who it was, but somebody else talks about putting things in a bin before you get rid of it for those particular kids.
Yes.
And you keep it in that bin, you see if they notice it, and then you get rid of it. But for the most part, I can be pretty quick about getting rid of stuff without anybody caring.
Yeah. Amen. Those things typically have about a 24-hour lifespan in my house too, for that reason. And yeah, for those, like, and then I have one of my kids is like obsessed with rocks. Everywhere he goes, if you go on a walk, if you go out in the front yard, which I don't even know that there are rocks somehow in my yard under the grass. He digs them up, I guess. There's just little rocks he wants to keep. And so I have said, okay, you want to keep these rocks? That's fine. So he has like a little kind of shoebox size thing. This is your spot for your rocks. Once this fills up, that means you've got to let some go. So if you want to bring more rocks in, do you want the new ones? Do you really love the new ones? Or do you want to get rid of some of these older ones that you don't care for so much, right? And he's 4 and he understands that concept. And if you can teach them while they're young to establish those physical boundaries and to pay attention to those cues, that will serve them for a lifetime. And he gets it. He gets it. And he knows that's my boundary. I'm not willing to waver on that.
Right. Yeah. And I a lot of times too will have kids that aren't the best at taking care of their things. And that's when I get rid of things. I'm like, well, but you, this was laying, I saw that thing on the floor 4 times. Mm. So now it's no longer yours. You know, if you cared about it, it wouldn't have been sitting there. So yeah, I try to teach the same thing.
One thing that's helped me, especially with like old, like slightly older kids, maybe like 6+, is like if you need to like edit their clothes or their bedroom, I've had students do this and it's worked really well, is they just take everything out. So like kind of pile everything up and say, put back what you want to keep. Everything else will go. And they will only put back the stuff probably that they truly love. Versus walking into the room before all this and going, all right, find 10 things to get rid of. Comes a lot, right? Comes a lot more like, oh, I got to get rid of stuff. I don't want to do that.
When that is a nice distinction.
The volume of things and they're like, right? I need to put this stuff back because mom says what I don't put back by 5 p.m. today is going to Goodwill or going to the charity or going to the shelter or whatever, right? Like,
yeah,
that's a deadline and I'm put back the stuff I really want to keep. And then they're lazy about the rest that they're like meh about.
Right.
And doing it the other way, they'd be like, ah, I don't know. I want to keep that meh thing. Cause it's.
Yeah. And right? I agree for older, cause that's really starting to work for my older girls. They are getting to the point where they actually appreciate how it feels to clean their room whenever it's not completely packed full of stuff, because they're hoarders by nature. They, you know, I think most kids are. They don't like getting rid of things, but we'll do a thorough clean with my encouragement. It's not something I can send them upstairs to the trash bag. They don't come down with near the amount of stuff that they need to. And then they appreciate that, oh, my room's clean. I can see all the things that I actually wanted to see. There's a shirt that I never wore this entire season, and it was stashed behind all of my ugly stuff.
That's so good. And I love how you're, you know, encouraging them and just making it a positive process. Like you're helping them, holding their hand along the way. I think we all need that, whether it's us sometimes, our partners or our kids of any age, versus like you said, here's a bag, I'm setting a timer, you know, fill this up or else.
Fill it up.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So I think that's really cool. And sharing those, you know, being consistent about those expectations are huge.
Yeah, it goes. I mean, that's like the ideal scenario. There's also the times where I go up there and I'm like, what have you guys done? Where did this stuff come from? I call it a mom clean. I'm like, every once in a while, dad can't do it. The kids can't do it. This needs a mom clean.
Ruthless.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Like we are going to go through this. And my first step is always getting rid of it over like recategorizing and reorganizing. It's like, no, just get rid of it, you know?
And I'm also glad you brought that up because that's a common mistake I see. People tell me all the time, like, oh, I just decluttered. I just did a big declutter purge, 6 months ago. And when I really ask them some questions and we talk about that experience, most of the time, all they're doing is just moving stuff from pile to pile and reorganizing it. They're mostly moving things around. I say organizing loosely because you can't really organize clutter. You can, but you can't.
Yeah.
And versus letting it go. And they're like, oh, I thought I was decluttering when I was doing this. And I'm like, no, it's still in your home.
Decluttering's actually getting it out.
That's right. And so maybe bringing it back to like the basic definition, like get that junk out. And then what's left that you want to keep, then organize that. So just get it in the right order and your life will be way easier.
Yeah. Like I find with the kids' rooms, my girls' room, especially, it gets to the point where you can't make it look clean. No matter how much time you spend, you can't do it because they get to the point where they have so much stuff. And that's when I know we need trash bags out to the car because it's just not even, it should be an easy process. Like my room, me and my husband, our room, I could go in there in 5 minutes and it look amazing. But that's because we have just what we need. And I have, just the few decor pieces that we like, and it can look, and I think most parents' rooms are that way. I can make it look good in 5 minutes, no matter how big of a mess it is. Kids' rooms, not so much.
As long as you have that Zen space, though, and I love how yours is your bedroom. I love having like a clean, decluttered bedroom. Actually, I've read a few studies on this many years ago, and it still baffles my mind. One of the studies said that we actually sleep better in an uncluttered space. So even sleeping at night, our brains recognize, oh my gosh, when I open my eyes, there's going to be piles of stuff everywhere looking at me. And that tells your mind and tells your brain there's more to do. So the analogy I often use, Lisa, is imagine you just had a really long day with the kids, homeschooling, virtual schooling, you're exhausted. Finally, the last one goes to sleep at night. For the first time all day, you sit down on the couch and you're like, oh, time to turn on Netflix or hop on Instagram, right? And then imagine your partner walks into the living room and is like, what are you doing, Lisa? Get up off your booty. There's more stuff to do. You have things to do, right? Clutter and these piles of stuff and this mess, even if you don't want to call it clutter, that's what it's telling our brains. And so I love that you have a simplified bedroom that you can do a quick reset in and, just feel good in and sleep better. It's just awesome. I love it.
Yeah. That is where I'd like to get the kids' rooms, but as much as I can convince them to keep what they love, they still have way more stuff than me. Let's face it. And to an extent, I think with kids over a certain age, my mom, she just let me go and she let my room be a mess and she tried not to go in it very often.
And I don't think there's any right or wrong answer either. I worry sometimes, I'm very cautious not to pressure my kids ever, even from a very young age, to let go of stuff. A lot of students I work with, especially when it comes to toy clutter, are like, well, shouldn't I involve my 2-year-old or 3-year-old in the process and say, hey, we can give this to another little boy or girl. And I'm like, maybe for some kids who have an older sibling that they can kind of lean into during the process and mimic, and maybe, but they don't truly understand at that age what's happening. All they know is their fire truck they haven't played with in 6 months is going to someone else, and all of a sudden they really want that fire truck, right? Because it's, children see oftentimes, and this even goes to teenagers and adults, right? Me too. Sometimes we see our stuff as an extension of us, not as something completely separate and just objective, like it's my phone, right? Well, actually this phone is a part of me, has my apps, has the pictures of my kids.
Yeah.
And so keeping that in mind, and I always tell my students, there will always be time as your kids get older and can understand the declutter process and the concept of it a little more solidly to teach them about donating and charity and paying it forward. Like, don't feel like you have to try and do that when they're 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old. just don't do it. And if they have a little more in their bedroom than you're okay with, you got to find your happy medium, for both your kids' personality and yours.
And 2 or 3, I feel like, just trust me as a mom of 12, 10, 8, 6, and down, you can get away still with keeping their room decluttered. It's when they're, I mean, if I got stuff out of my 2 and 3 year old's room, they wouldn't even notice, you know, yeah. Especially if it was secretive.
That's right.
They wouldn't even remember it existed. And maybe my kids are weird, but I think that's normal. It's the older kids where you have a problem. So right now, you know, enjoy it. You're decluttering. Nobody cares. That's fine. It gets tricky when they're 12 and they want to keep this bulky, like 3D printer and a Cricut and a sewing machine all on the same desk. Okay. That's when it's tricky.
Having it bigger kids. And a little more expensive sometimes.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And there's fabric and there's, and my kids, they are so creative. And they love to sew and just tell your students who have 2 or 3 year olds, don't worry.
Yeah.
That's the easy stage.
Do it now. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Do it now. Enjoy
do it. Now.
Enjoy keeping your decluttered spaces. So tell us where best to find you or how to, you know, if someone feels like they need some more help in this space, what you offer for helping people declutter their lives if they're brand new to it.
Absolutely. I would say 100% dive into my podcast right away. I have over 100 episodes. You know, it's funny because when I started that show over 2 years ago, my friends were like, how are you going to talk about clutter for like ever?
And that I'm
like,
often
you have no idea.
Yeah. I know some YouTubers who do it and I'm like, They always have new content every week.
Amazing?
You know, there's, and it's always interesting too.
Right. So go find a topic or, you know, an episode title that resonates. And then my most popular program by far is my 14-day Clutter Crusher Challenge. So my next one starts November 8th. So this is a live community-based challenge where I give you prompts every day. I just ask that you commit to 20 minutes. So this is perfect for anyone if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you don't know where to start, or even for someone who's maybe been on the decluttering journey before, but just wants some extra tools in their toolbox to just further their progress. You know, this challenge, we just wrapped one up. So I'm like smiling because it's just so many amazing transformations, both in people's homes and then like in their hearts with their, you know, connections with their less mental clutter, less stress. It's just so cool. It's just, this is why I do what I do. It's not just about having a tidy home. And I tell people all the time, I could care less if your home is tidy. I want you to make it so it's easy to tidy. But just ultimately at the end of the day, you need to focus and who on and what you want to focus on and just have more joy, right? And so my 14-day Clutter Crusher Challenge, you can find that in my Instagram profile, my website, or my podcast too.
Okay, yeah. So the Maximized Minimalist is your podcast. Mm-hmm. I will also leave links in the show notes and the description box below. So perfect. Thank you so much, Katie, for joining me.
Thanks, Lisa, for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Simple Farmhouse Life podcast, and I will see you in the next one.